astronauts report it feels good. T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Hello, baby.
Hello, baby.
Hello.
Hello again. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, friend.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, home.
Hi.
Yo.
G'day.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, guys.
Hackers Without Borders, the greatest podcast on the planet.
Guys, tune in. Great show. It's not just about football.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Todd Friedel, and he'll answer to Friedel.
I'll answer to anything.
And you're in Georgia.
I am. I've lived here most of the past 40 years. I've lived away from the homeland of Wisconsin. I grew up in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. In the middle between Green Bay and Milwaukee. Joined the military in 1986, served through the first Gulf War, got out, had a 15-year break in service, never thought I would serve again, and then rejoined the military in 2006, and have been a recruiter full-time for the Georgia Army National Guard for the past 15 years, and I'm about to retire. And move back to Wisconsin. My mom still lives there, and she refuses to move south. So I'm going to head back to the Holy Land after wandering around into the desert of Georgia for the past 40 years. And I'm looking forward to it. Absolutely.
Good. Good. Returning to the homeland is important. Returning to good, clean Wisconsin air is questionable. The things I want to talk to you about today. We've seen the departure of Aaron Jones. We've seen the incoming of Josh Jacobs. We've seen McKinney getting signed. Do you think the Packers are done in free agency? I mean, we've still got almost a month before the draft here.
I think they're done with the signings that are going to excite us, right? There always seems to be those signings that happen with the bargain bin kind of free agents, the ones that end up turning to Packer gold. We've just had a bunch of recent ones of those where we seem to sign guys off the scrap heap, and then they come in and, you know, they make the Arizona Cardinals look horrible. They make the Atlanta Falcons look like the worst franchise ever. So I think that Goody's going to have some fillers, I guess, to make up for what he doesn't get in the draft, or maybe he signs them before the draft and then he's able to go after different positions, different position groups that we might not have as high a priority on right now.
So being a Packer fan, you're aware that the Bears suck. And I'm curious to, if you were Ryan Poles, would you be getting rid of Justin Fields?
I'm torn on this, right? I'm really, really torn on this. First off, I love the fact that we always beat the Bears, right? Yeah. And I love the fact that the Packers take care of business on field, but I'm old enough to remember when it wasn't always that way.
Yeah.
And part of the reason why I feel we're fortunate living in the time that we do currently is because the organization did not have a quarterback plan after Bart Starr. And we suffered for 20 years. Yeah. And one of my first memories as a Packer fan, it must have been like 1974 or so. I didn't really know what was going on, but I knew that my dad and my grandfathers were visibly upset about the quarterback position and the Jerry Tegi of it all, the John Hadel of it all. Of course, now as I've gotten older, I've, you know, done the research and figured out why there was so many cuss words that were said on Sundays. But I mean, we're just fortunate to be in love with an organization that doesn't have an owner and that made a decision. Once they got Favre, they were like, we're never doing that again. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think the Bears have suffered from the, just the impatience of having an owner and people's jobs being on the line and not being able, because if like right now I would have kept Fields, I would have drafted Caleb Williams, and I would have let him sit for at least a year, and I would have run with Fields. And either way, like if Fields plays out of his mind and becomes an MVP, which I don't think would happen, but if it did, then you've got draft capital and Caleb Williams. And if he does and you want to keep Williams, then you can trade Williams. Like I don't see the value in trading Justin Fields for a sixth round pick. Like that just doesn't
Next year's sixth round pick.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not even gonna benefit you this year. You've just lost your dynamic player for a dozen footballs. I mean, terrible, terrible choice. I think myself, if I was Ryan Poles, I would have said, okay, listen, Justin is not surrounded by the best supporting cast that we could possibly get. I'm going to take that number one pick. I'm not taking Caleb Williams. I'm going to trade it back. I'm going to trade it to a team. Off the top of my head, I can only think of the Packers that have multiple second round picks. But, you know, we would take a team that's got a ton of picks, and I would heavy load it. I mean, the Washington Commanders are taking a look. They want Caleb Williams. They want this guy. They want that guy. I'd still keep my top 10 pick that I earned with being the crappiest team in the NFC North. But I think I would have built an offensive line around Justin Fields. And that's what he seemed to really be missing. I mean, sure, there was problems with the defense. Sure, there was problems with some of the wide receivers. Sure, that running game is just trash. But, you know, you take Favre hands the reins over to Rodgers. Rodgers takes a team that was in the NFC Championship, and he's able to step right in, and he's had a couple of years to watch, so it's not such a shell shock. Then you got Jordan Love, who's standing there with a brand new, fresh squad of offensive line. We still need some offensive line help. Don't hold me to the, you know, we've still got to get a couple of players, two, three guys. But he's got this, he's surrounded by the supporting cast, you know. It's just like a TV series when they kill off the main character. If the supporting cast can keep it going while they bring in a new character, then the series will go on. Ryan Poles getting rid of Justin Fields, I hope that one bites him in the ass. As much as I dragged Justin Fields and the Bears through the social media of Twitter, I hope that one bites him in the ass. I hope that Caleb Williams pulls an Eli Manning and says, there's absolutely no way I'm going to Chicago. That's not happening. And, you know, they send him off to Washington. Caleb Williams, another one of these rookie quarterbacks that's just going to be thrown into that dumpster fire of a team right now.
And historically, you look at, because it wasn't always this way, right?
Yeah.
Like, The Packers tried to do it like they – Jerry Tegi won two national championships at Nebraska. And they got him and they put him in there and he couldn't do squat with it. And, I don't have the memories of the specific plays or games or anything like that. I was very young. But I certainly remember the tone of, like, desperation that was felt when the Packers trade – five picks or whatever it was for John Hadel. And then, you know, 2 years later, they're trading everybody for Lynn Dickey. And it was, and then Dickey breaks his legs for 2 years. And it was just this never ending, like, if you don't develop a player in the system and you're constantly hiring new GMs and new coaches and it's not their guy, and then they're looking for their guy, like, you just have this revolving door at quarterback and you're never able to absolutely evaluate whether or not the guy can play.
Well, You know, Ted Thompson brings in Goody 1999. Goody sits in the office. He watches how it's done. Then when he gets the reins, he jumps right in there. His first draft, I'll give him the, hey, everybody makes a mistake. But his last draft, there was maybe only one player that he missed on, and that guy ended up getting hurt in camp. You know, every single one of those guys contributed. Every single one of those guys, every time they pick somebody, I was like, who? And you start going through your phone quick. Who did we just grab? Why did we get this guy? Why are we grabbing that guy? Then you see them on the field and you're like, how did this guy not go top 10? How did this guy not go in the first round? What is Goot seeing that nobody else is seeing? And Bruce and I did an episode one time where we were talking about some of the best NFL GMs and how well they do in the draft. And good NFL GMs do about 51%. 51% of their picks actually pan out. Goot's hitting at about 65. After last year, probably even closer to about 70% now. I mean, we're killing it out of the park. And the reason is, it's not, and now don't get me wrong here, it's not just because Jordan Love. It's not just because Aaron Jones. Just because it's because it started in the office with the culture. It started in the, listen, we don't need a quarterback. Aaron Rodgers is starting to get up there. This is our opportunity to get one that we kind of like. Let's go grab one. And sure, you know, it caused Aaron to have a hissy fit, but it also caused him to play back-to-back MVP seasons.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Whether the players in place are using it as motivation, like, hey, this guy's going to take my job, or the development, because offensive linemen seem to be the one position still where there is a little bit of patience, but even now that is like wearing thin with some teams. And so the expectation that you're going to take some kid from, you know, Mississippi State who, yeah, he's played at a high level in the SEC, but he hasn't played against the top SEC rushers at their position, like the NFL is, you know, every game, week in, week out. Like, you don't get a break in the NFL. Like, everybody is so good. And then not only from these big conferences, but then you've got these Power Five conferences where they find these gems that come in there and like they're playing at a super high level as well, you know? And I just think there needs more patience is such a thing.
It's that 1% of the 1%, right? And for us Canadians, we see this in hockey all the time. We see these kids when they're 14 years old and Nike is already out there buying them hockey sticks. And we see they're just heads and tails better than everyone. And then they get to the high school level and they're heads and tails better. And then they get to the next step, college or maybe the OHL or something. And the production comes down. They're still great players, but the production comes down because everybody that's around them were all high school stars. Then you get to the NHL, and every single one of those guys has their jersey hung up in some high school somewhere, just like in the NFL. Reed holds, you know, the record for receptions at this school. Wicks holds the records for receptions at this school. The list is 7 miles long. Each and every one of those guys was 100% dominant in their high school, dominant in their college, and then, you know, they were a sixth-round pick. You know, you're like, Who is this guy? Oh, he can't be too good. They're all good. They're all really good. And when I see guys on, especially on Twitter, right? I mean, Twitter is the great equalizer. Everybody's equal on Twitter, I guess. And they, you know, oh, well, you barely made the NFL. Let me tell you something. That in itself is like, I climbed Everest and you haven't climbed the stairs from your basement. Like, It's not even remotely close to, you can't, what kind of dig is, y'all, you barely made the NFL. I spent all my teenage years working out every day, going to extra camps, putting in the extra work to just even get looked at by the NFL. And nobody even gave me a sniff.
Yeah.
Right.
Being a military recruiter, I can tell you this. It's like meeting a high school kid who's like a junior in high school who's just watched, you know, every war movie that's out there that's popular. And he walks up to you and he says, hey, I want you to recruit me as a special forces sniper.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you're like, you ain't getting off the couch
yeah.
and doing that. You know, like that's not the way this works. There's steps involved, you know. Let me send you to infantry school, and then maybe you can jump out of planes and be airborne, and then you can maybe make it through the Ranger pre-course, and then you might be a Ranger, and then you might go to Special Forces, and then you might go to sniper school. Like, there's 17 steps along the way that people don't know about, but some kid sees a movie and he's like, I don't want to talk to you unless you're going to guarantee me that I can do this. And it's like, that's not the way it works. It's not the way it works.
When I was 18, I decided, because I'm a dual citizen, that my grandparents, my grandfathers, they both flew planes for the U.S. Navy in World War II. And I said, yeah, you know what? I'm going to fly. This is what I'm going to do. And I went down to North Dakota. I went to a recruitment center, and I had called ahead and done all the paperwork, and they said, listen, we're going to have, now this was in the 90s. Okay. So the early 90s, to age myself a bit. And they said, you know, we're going to have a whole bunch of guys come in on this day, and they're going to, they talked for, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes or whatever about the U.S. Navy. And then they had a whole bunch of these. So you did like an eye test, you know, and you stood there and you looked at the eye chart and stuff like that. And they did this test, and they had all these, I don't know what the rest of them are, because legitimately I did not get out of the eye test. So I get in, and the doctor says to me, he goes, so what do you want to do? Right. And I said, well, I want to fly planes just like my grandparents did. And he said, oh, okay. Can you read the eye chart right there? And so no problem. I read off the furthest line I could see. He goes, okay, hold still. And he comes at me with a pen light at my eyes. And he says, oh no, sorry, son, you can't fly jets. I said, what do you mean I can't fly jets? And he says, your pupils don't dilate quick enough. We can see it immediately in your eyes. And I said, so what does that mean? And he goes, well, you can't, if you're flying in the sun or in bright light, you can't see. I said, but I'll have a visor. He said, well, we got to assume that everything fails. And I said, but you can't do this to me. And he goes, let me tell you something, son. I have 20 jobs and a million applicants. Next, he says, next. Yeah. And that was it. I didn't even get to the next step. There was no other touch your toe. There was nothing else. It was like right then and there, I'm sorry, we've got, and that's what it is in the NFL. They're like, listen, man, I've got 300,000 kids that are eligible. We're going to draft 260, 270 of these kids. The odds of you being eliminated are much greater than you making it. So to dig on somebody by saying, oh, you barely made the NFL. That's like saying, oh, you barely won the lottery. You know, I won. I won. I get that an awful lot, especially with guys, with Christian Watson's dad. He's been on a bunch of times, and they'll say,
love the hitman.
Right?
Love the hitman.
He's awesome. And they're like, oh, well, you barely made the NFL. It's like, what kind of dig is that? Get out of your mom's basement. You barely mowed the lawn. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's from down here in Georgia, and the hitman is, he plays it real. Like, he doesn't pull any punches, even on Twitter. Like, he puts it out there, and I love his evaluation. I mean, if I could sit down with that man for a week and watch film, like, I think I would be 1,000 times smarter than whatever I think I know about football now. Like, it's just amazing what he's able to. Did you see today his evaluations between the linebacker positions, like the Mike and the Sam and the outside linebacker positions in a 4-3, and then what he thought was necessary for each position, and then the differences that, like, it, like, he goes into such depth, and you're just like, never knew, you know, like, I don't even know. And when you're talking about evaluating players and making decisions for multi-million dollar industry, like, it's just insane. It's absolutely insane.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. That man has forgotten more about football than we'll ever learn. You know, that guy, and that comes from playing at a high level. That's what that boils down to. You can have all your Twitter experts and all your guys, you know, Peter Bukkake, excuse me, I do this for a living. Trust me, one guy that quote unquote barely made the NFL knows volumes more than any of these experts who have never, you know, it's just like me trying to comment on what happens in the military, and I've never been in the military.
Yeah.
You know, there's
absolutely
There's just, why are you talking to me? I've said it before. I know me and Peter Bukkake got into it one time, and I said, why would I get driving lessons from a guy who doesn't drive? Like this, you don't make any sense whatsoever. You gotta, you know, get your head around the fact that your Pee Wee football days are gone. Stop evaluating, you know, multi-million-dollar players, and you know, and in the NFL, being open is inches, just inches, and that guy's wide open. We've seen it with Jordan Love this year throwing the rock, and you know, as we start to look at this draft that's coming up. Packers have the number 25 pick, and then they've got a couple of picks in the second round. We've got 11 picks overall, five in the first 100. What do you think we're looking at? What's your best guess? And like I've said on the podcast, I'm never right. I'm never right.
I am absolutely with you on that. Like what happens for me, this is the way I approach it. I do the mock drafts, and I do the free mock drafts. So the ones that update quickly as their pro days happen, or that sure. update quickly as they go through the combine, you know, there's always a lag there if you do the free ones. But I really think we're going to need some offensive linemen, but yeah. we have a history of drafting those in the later rounds.
Sure.
I think we value in the past, we value cornerback, we value edge, which I think is a sneaky position of need, given that we might not have Preston next year. So there could be some of that in play. D-line, I also think, is another sneaky position that of need, just because I don't know if I'm the only one that thought this, but when we went to that where we were rotating offensive linemen kind of thing, I almost thought of it as like, is this a wave of a future, right? Because the D linemen get rotated all the time, right? And so if I was a guard and you told me that, hey, every other series you're going to have off so that you can be more fresh to take on these guys when they're coming in on the fourth quarter, right? Like, I don't know if I would look at that as being helpful or being, you know, harmful. Like, you don't think I'm tough enough to play the whole game. But I mean, D linemen, if we're going to 4-3, we're going to have to rotate a lot of those guys. And we have some players now, but upgrade is upgrade, right? Yeah. Like, is there somebody in the drafts that's better week six than TJ Slayton is right now? You know? And if that's the case, then how much could that help us in the playoffs to stop the run? You know? So, and I don't know how they formulate out. I know that there's somebody smart with a big brain that's sitting somewhere and going, if we pick this player, then this is how it's going to formulate in our team. And then we're going to have a position of need here. And is that next player going to be available in the draft? The one that we like. Right. And so I've seen all the Cooper DeJean. I like Max Melton. I love the kid from Minnesota, Newman, for safety. But, you know, I go through these mock drafts and then somebody falls, like the outside linebacker whose names I can't pronounce from UCLA. Like, he falls to 25. I'm like, well, why not take him? You know, like what would I do there if I was Goody? You know, and so trade back, you know, trade back and do the safe thing and get the interior offensive lineman from, you know, Duke, and then get a tackle, and then, you know, then get your safety. And then, like, it's just such a crapshoot. And you're looking at 31 other people that are making decisions that are going to affect your decision.
Yeah.
And that's the difficult thing, because you can't control them, you know?
Well, and sometimes those guys grab the guy that you're going after simply just to screw with you, because they know that's the guy. Minnesota did it with Justin Jefferson. We had Justin Jefferson circled. We were trying to move up. Minnesota grabs Jefferson. Wow, there goes your number one threat that we wanted to get for Aaron Rodgers. You know, it's interesting that you bring up the D lineman. 2010, when we won the Super Bowl, we were running a 3-4 defense. We had eight defensive linemen that we were rotating in constantly rotating them in. Currently on the roster right now, we've got six. I think that we need especially playing a 4-3, we need two, three, maybe even four more defensive linemen. Are we going to get them all in the draft? Probably not. Probably not. Are we going to get one? I hope so. There's a couple of guys out there that kind of look like beasts. I'd like to see another beast out there. That way there isn't a quality drop-off when we start rotating these guys. You know, you don't want to take Kenny Clark and Slayton out for, you know, Shoebox Willie and, you know, Doug from down the street when maybe we could get a guy like Sweat or, you know, somebody maybe sort of notable, you know, that we could get in there. Again, who knows? Who knows what they're going to draft? I called my shot and I said, first round pick, offensive tackle. That's what the Packers are going to do because they never do that. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah, there you go. And you've talked to Kenny Clark a lot, and I think that like just getting that perspective of like how difficult it is to just get gassed for like a 15-yard run and then hold somebody, and now it's like third and four, and then you get gashed again for a pass play or a run that makes a first down, and then you're like, oh, I thought I was going to get off the field and get a break. You know, like it's just as frustrating as it can be as a fan to watch that. Like, why can't we stop a third and five? You know, the players have to be going through the same thing. Like, they got a high from getting a tackle for a loss or getting a sack and thinking that they're going to get off the field and that they're going to get a break and they're going to be able to like get some rest and come back in refreshed. And then it doesn't happen, you know? And so I don't think that we have enough. We don't have enough depth at so many. We have great players at many of the positions on the defense, but I don't think we have enough depth to make it so that the quality of play doesn't drop off when somebody comes in and substitutes out.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's completely deflating. And one thing as a former player and I coached for 10 years, one thing that I watch when I watch the defenses is our hands on hips. Hands on hips are the first sign that they're tired and they're frustrated and they're not enjoying themselves. And when you watched our Joe Barry defense get walked down the field 10, 12, 14 plays, you could see halfway through, hands were on hips. Guys were looking up at the sky. You know, they were begging the Lord to help them, trying to, you know, get something to go their way. And it is beyond deflating. And when that happens, and then you have a LaFleur brain fart of let's throw three quick passes that go incomplete and we'll hand the ball right back to them. I mean, the defense is on the sidelines. They barely got oxygen and water in their hands and they're being told I'm going back out. Are you kidding me? It's like going through a 12-minute round with Mike Tyson. And then instead of getting your whole 2 minutes in the corner, after 15 seconds, they go, okay, Mike's ready. Get back out there. No.
Yeah.
You know, no, I'm not ready, you know, and right. You start seeing players, and this is, you know, Rasul Douglas was moved because he was vocal, you know, Devondre Campbell was a little bit vocal and now he's gone and he's nothing but vocal about how the entire team let him down. Everybody's frustrated. The scheme itself was not working. You had Coach Barry trying to coach the scheme and not the players he wanted. He coached the scheme. He tried to get the players to use his scheme instead of coaching the players into a feasible scheme. This Halfley guy, he knows. This guy knows, especially since he was in the college level. Some years in the college level, you have a great defensive line. The next year, you've only got good corners. The next year, you've got great linebackers, but your corners can't cover. It goes all over the map. So in your head, you're like, this is what I want to run. And then you start plugging in your players and you go, I can't run half of this because I just don't have the players for it.
Yeah, you know? I really felt for Quay Walker a lot. And I guess what I think about with the defense last year was you always see the quarterback coming off the field, looking at the iPad and being able to, or maybe it's not an iPad, maybe it's a Microsoft, whatever product, but like being able to go through the last plays and being able to get some coaching on the side and talk about like, hey, you might have wanted to have done this or you might have wanted to have done that. You know what I never saw last year? Quay Walker coming off the field and getting coached.
Yeah.
Right. Like I never saw him looking at a pad going like, okay, you move this guy to this gap. And what we should have done is moved him to this gap. Right. And because like you said, a lot of times there wasn't time to do that because we were three and out and you're going back on the field to play, put your helmet on, you know? Yeah. And so my hope is that the players will get coached to the level. Quay Walker could be a beast if he's allowed to play. Right. Well, but he's got to be coached to that level where he doesn't have to be worried about his decisions on the field.
Well, and he's also got to be put in those positions to succeed. You don't take a pilot and make him drive a boat. You know, you put a pilot behind the wheel of a plane. You put him in the cockpit. Quay Walker is a dog, and that dog needs to be let off the leash and just chase those guys down. That's what he did in Georgia. That's what we drafted him to do. And Joe Barry is out there going, so what I need you to do is start thinking. It's like, that's not what he does. That's not what he does.
Wichita, Kansas.
From the UK.
From Los Angeles.
From Northern Wisconsin.
From Nova Scotia.
From the Derby City, Louisville, Kentucky.
From Central Illinois.
From Southern Cali.
From Turkey.
Omaha, Nebraska.
From California.
From Melbourne, Australia.
From Chicago, Illinois.
They're from the UK. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
And go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Robinson, Green Bay Packers. For 10 years, Super Bowl one and two champions, Hall of Famer, Pink Packer Hall of Famer. And I tell you, I enjoy listening to Packers Without Borders.
It's time for Matt's Motivational Meaningful Moment.
Priests and Christmas trees have a lot more in common than you would think. Their balls are just for decoration.
This has been Matt's Motivational Meaningful Moment.
This is Tazim Wajet. You're listening to Packers Without Borders.
Brussels in Belgium.
Central Illinois.
LA, California.
Nova Scotia.
Las Vegas, Nevada.
Northern Wisconsin.
Sweden.
Sheffield.
We're in Michigan.
Louisville, Kentucky.
Seattle.
Wichita, Kansas.
From the UK.
Chicago, Illinois.
Granger, Indiana.
From Melbourne, Australia.
Omaha, Nebraska.
Cincinnati.
From Ohio. From
Nebraska.
San Diego.
From Willow Springs, Illinois.
California.
Nebraska.
From
Northern Michigan.
Austin, Texas.
California.
LA, California.
Turkey.
Kansas City.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Southern Cali.
You are listening to Packers Without Borders, the finest podcast in all the land. People move into this groove up through the night. Take a flight
to Paris. Do a show, watch me blow in the spotlight. You've got Jair Alexander, who is arguably one of the best cover corners in the league, right? Man-to-man, straight up, pressure, shut that guy down. And you're like, listen, I need you to play zone. It's like, what are you doing? Are you purposely picking the opposite of what they're good at to show that you're a savant or an idiot? Clearly, he's an idiot, and that's why he's gone. Halfley standing there going, and this is what we said all offseason, was we're going to see that front line push. We're going to see the edges get after him. You're going to see Quay coming after that quarterback, creating a lot more pressure, 5 and 6 man rush. And we're going to see Stokes, and we're going to see Jair playing man up. Because all they got to do is cover the guy for about 3 seconds and we should be at the quarterback. And we saw none of that.
Yeah.
None of it.
And you look at the kids that stepped up, like the first year players, like there was some Carrington Valent, like there's some stuff on Twitter today about the windows that he allowed receptions to happen. And it was like magic that the ball got caught. Like it wasn't, he was not out of position. Like the only thing that you could say bad about that was maybe his head wasn't turned around to make a play on the ball. But as far as like body on body and inches within himself and the receiver, like those windows weren't open. Like it took an extraordinary throw and an extraordinary catch to be able to make that reception happen. The kid can play. The kid can play. And so I don't think like his PFF score, whatever it is, like I don't think that does him justice because like those balls were magically placed there, you know?
Well, they always reverted back to, well, would you rather that they caught an 80-yard bomb and blew us up? Well, let me ask you. I don't like watching the tight end catch three passes for 40 yards apiece through the middle wide open. If they beat Jair on a hell of a play with an incredible throw, I'm going to tip my hat. I'm going to go, did you see that? That was incredible. I'll be one of those fans who's clapping going, incredible. You beat that guy hands down. I mean, even when I played, I remember one game where I owned this guy for the entire game, and we got late into the third quarter, and he made such a double move on me that it left me in the dust, and I was trailing him, and he caught the ball one-handed, miracle catch, took it into the end zone, and at the end of the game, I walked up to him, and I said, fuck, that was a hell of a catch, man. Hell of a catch. I can live with, you did the impossible to beat me. I can live with that. I can't live with, you let me walk downfield. We lined up 9 yards deep on a 3rd and 4. We put Preston Smith on Devontae Adams. Yes. You know what I mean? The safeties were lined up 26 yards back on a 2nd and 5. What are they doing 26 yards deep? Like, yeah. What, are they getting popcorn for everybody? What is the agenda back there? And Barry's going further back. We don't want to get beat with an 80-yard bomb. Trust me. The defense gets beat. If Jair gets beat on an 80-yard bomb, that's burnt into the mental Rolodex. He is never going to forget that SOB beat me on that. He is never going to beat me again. You watch Justin Jefferson when Jair was on him that game, and Jefferson caught one pass, making an inside move on the slot. After that, Jair was like, try that shit again. Try it again.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
I dare you. Right, and that's what you want: is your guys out there focused and learning from their mistakes, not being handicapped by, well, it's 3rd and 4. I got to play 8 yards deep. Well, who are you going to throw to? Anybody? Because they're all open. I mean, absolutely ridiculous.
I think sometimes as fans we forget that each one of these players has a personal amount of pride, right? Yeah. Like they're playing for them, like. They're not just playing for a check, you know? No. I mean, we think that they are, right? Like, yeah. I mean, a lot of times that's the way that it's perceived. But, like, there's trash talking that's going on the field, you know? And, like, Elgton Jenkins holding up, you know, Donaldson. Like that's a point of pride for him. That's going to be a point of pride for him on the 2023 season that – he did not allow him at all to get any kind of pressure on Jordan Love, right?
Like, I love how you brought up Aaron Donald, because I want to talk to you real quick before we get into. I got a game for us to play, but Aaron Donald, you're old enough to remember. I'm old enough to remember Reggie White, and there was a Twitter. Who would you rather have, Aaron Donald or Reggie White? And I always thought to myself, you know, Aaron Donald, I would love to have this guy on our team, right? This is a fantastic defensive lineman. Reggie White struck fear into offensive coordinators, offensive linemen, running backs. Chris Carter to this day talks about how Reggie threw him with one arm into Warren Moon. You know, there are so many stories of Reggie transforming the entire defense, and I don't hear as many or any about Aaron Donald. Who is it? If you in their prime, who are you picking?
Oh, Reggie White, without a doubt. And not just for everything that he did on the field, but as a Green Bay Packer fan, the fact that he came to Green Bay and made it okay for other free agents to choose to come to Green Bay, I will forever be indebted to him as a fan, right? Because at the time he was the most sought after free agent that ever was, because it was the first year of free agency like that. And the fact that he chose Green Bay, and Green Bay was not Wisconsin itself. I mean, ever since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar left, I mean, it was one of those things where, like, they felt like we couldn't have athletes of a high caliber in the state of Wisconsin.
We're not allowed to have nice things.
Right. And and for him to choose Green Bay, and then part of that was also, you know, how tough Brett Favre acted the year before in that game against the Eagles when he you know, hung in there and played through some pain. And Reggie was like, that dude's tough. You know, I wouldn't mind having him as a teammate, you know. That him coming to Green Bay has forever changed the Packers. I mean, that's what gave us Charles Woodson. I honestly feel that in my heart. Like Charles Woodson was like, well, Reggie went there, I'm going there, you know? So without a doubt, it's Reggie White. Yeah.
The Mike Holmgren story about how he recruited him when Reggie said, you know, I'm going to let God decide. And then Mike Holmgren called and left him a message and said, Reggie, this is God. I want you to go to Green Bay. And then Reggie afterwards, hey, coach, that's pretty funny. You know, we're talking night and day between Aaron Donald and Reggie. Aaron Donald, definitely one of the great defensive linemen. And, you know, some people argue he wasn't used properly. Listen, Reggie was put in the middle and kept Barry Sanders to 1 yard the entire game. Reggie was put to the outside and he would, I mean, we're talking about a guy who would get sack after sack. And if he didn't get sacked, he created more sacks because that quarterback was running for his life within a second or two. And he had that hump club move that to this day, you still don't see it being performed that way. He would get that big hook and just flip guys on their ass. And, you know,
and the timing of that, like I've heard other defensive linemen try to describe it. And they were just like, if you're off by a half a second, like it's using the body weight of the offensive lineman against them. Right. And just being able to, when they're making that twitch to recover, you're able to like continue to push their momentum that way. And like, he's the only one that had that instinct to do it that way. Cause that's the only thing it could be. I don't think it's something that can be taught.
No. And if it could be taught, we'd see it way more. We'd see it way more. And it's just, it's just not the same. Lucas Van Ness, out on the edge like that, he's got a great move. It's called, I'm going to run at you with everything I got. And you're just going to hang on for dear life. And that seems to work, right? It seems to work. That boy is strong as hell and he is fast. I'm seeing him as like the next Bosa, the next Hutchinson, the next, you know, he's especially with Halfley, he's going to get a chance to just pin his ears back and go. Yeah. You know, none of this. Well, if the tight end flips out, then I may need you to cover. No, he won't need to hear the call in the huddle because he'll know my hand's getting in the dirt. When that ball moves, I'm coming as hard as I can, right? Listen, I got a game I want to play with you real quick here while we've got a few minutes left. It's called Riddle Me This. So these are some adult riddles, okay? Mm-hmm. And you just do your best guess. Give me your best guess. I mean, I'm setting you up for failure is what I'm doing here. I'm giving you old Joe Barry of riddles.
I'm okay with that. I'm absolutely okay with that.
Okay. Here you go. Here's your first one. What's a mixed feeling?
A mixed feeling is a Packer win and Aaron Jones getting 200 yards.
Okay. My mixed feeling is when you see your mother-in-law backing off a cliff in your new car.
Okay.
That's a mixed feeling. That's a mixed feeling. You're like, well, maybe I'll. What is the height of conceit?
Being a Bears fan.
Or having an orgasm and calling out your own name. That would be it there.
That's really good.
Could you imagine that? That would be first and only date with that girl right there.
She's like, absolutely.
He called out his own name, and the girls would be like, "Excuse me, what?" He called out. He didn't say, "Oh Jesus," or "Oh God," or "Oh Martha." He said, "Oh Todd."
Yeah.
What's the definition of macho?
The definition of macho would be doing the hot pepper challenge. in some kind of weird setting in church. In church.
Jogging home from your vasectomy.
Ooh.
Jogging. That would be true.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
What's the difference between a G-spot and a golf ball?
I don't know. I've got three divorces. So I obviously never figured that one out.
A guy will actually search for a golf ball.
Oh, there you go. There you go. That's the problem.
How do New Zealanders, am I saying that right? New Zealanders? How do New Zealanders practice safe sex?
This has got to be something with sheep or something like that. Like,
Yeah. You got it. It is. They paint the X on the back of sheeps that kick.
There you go.
Here's one for you.
Why is divorce so expensive? I should know this one. Because staying married is, I don't know. What is it?
Because it's worth it.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. What's a Yankee?
Someone who has stayed in the South unwelcomed.
It's the same as a quickie, only a guy can do it alone. Last but not least, what do Tupperware and a walrus have in common?
Tupperware and a walrus. Tupperware, you have to lift the lid to burp it, so I don't know what that has to do with a walrus, though.
They both love a tight seal.
Oh, burp. God.
Ba-da-ba-ba-da. There we go.
That was good. That was really good.
Terrible. Todd Friedel, all the way from Georgia. Thanks for coming on, man. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for talking some shit with us and, some of the Packers news. Where can everybody find you in the Twitter sphere?
Sergeant Friedel, at Sergeant Friedel. That's my little handle. I'm going to keep it after I retire in May. I'm going to keep it that way for a while. I might change my name later, but I got to meet all my Packer friends, right? So once I'm up there in Wisconsin, I have all these plans of attending at least the tailgate part of around Titletown and meet some of my Packer Twitter friends. I keep hearing that Twitter friends aren't real, but like I see these people on Twitter and they all get together and they're all at the game together. You know, it looks like a good time. And so I got a camper and there's an RV park right across from Lambeau. So I'm planning on parking the camper there and enjoying some Saturday evenings and Sundays around Lambeau.
There you go. That sounds like a plan. I've got plans to go up for a game this year. And of course I'll be holding a NFL draft party when Green Bay holds the draft, not this April, but next April. And I'm sure I will bump into at least one or two Twitter friends out there. I'll have to give away some prizes. You know, it's like when my mom used to put a pork chop around my neck so the dog could play with me. You know,
there you go. My son is all right. My son's a huge Packer fan. And he's already told me, he's like, Dad, you're taking that camper up there to the RV park. We're spending the week and we are going to spend the week up there at Lambeau during the NFL draft. So I plan on being there too. That's a once in a lifetime thing. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mentioned it to my son. He's 13. He says, will they have Wi-Fi? I said, are you kidding me?
They will have Wi-Fi.
I'm like, the last thing you want to do is be on your bloody tablet the whole time. We're in Green Bay. You're going to want to see the sights and experience this. And he's like, look, I could do a virtual tour right here on my iPad. You know, those.
It's not the same.
Listen, Todd, it's been an absolute pleasure, buddy. And I'm going to leave it by saying peace and go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end. It hurts to to set you free, but you'll never follow me. The end of laughter and soft lies, the end of nights we try to die. This is the end.
Thank you.